You're listening to the ModernDogTrainer.net podcast, bringing you the best industry tips and topics for professional dog trainers worldwide.
Hi there, you're listening to the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. I'm Ines McNeil, founder of the Modern Dog Trainer blog and podcast. And today I'm chatting with Kat Camplin, my co-host, and Jeffrey McClure.
Don't forget to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at Modern Trainer and on Facebook. All the links are in the show notes at themoderndogtrainer.net. So put your feet up, grab something to drink, and let's get started.
Awesome. So thanks everybody for listening. Welcome, Jeffrey. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, so I'm 31 years old. I live in Scottsbluff, Nebraska, which is almost as far west Nebraska as you can get before you hit Wyoming. I live here with my fiance, my four kids, three dogs, 13 rats, one cat. Wow. I have been a dog trainer for, about 2 years. I'm fairly bad with like spans of time and how long I've been doing stuff. I grew up in Arizona. I moved up to Nebraska when I was 11. So, I don't know. I have a mohawk. I have tattoos. I'm not what most people can see when you hear about a positive reinforcement clicker trainer. I've been told that many times. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Japanese term ikigai, which is like your life purpose, which is a thing you love, a thing you're good at, a thing you can make money at, and a thing the world needs. So this for me is definitely that. And so, you know, being a modern dog trainer in rural western Nebraska, there's that what the world needs definitely fits in there. And I guess I make money at it, and you know, I love it, and it's something I'm pretty good at. I've not had too much failure at it. So
that's awesome. So what did you do for a living before dog training, and how did you decide to switch gears and be a dog trainer?
I have done everything. I'm a jack of all trades. I continue with a handyman service that I, you know, because like I said, I have four kids, and rural western Nebraska dog training isn't, you know. But every job that I've ever had on my resume was a job that I had. So I didn't ever have to pay someone else to do it for me. So I've worked automotive, I worked construction, roofing, landscaping, everything. So wow. It's always something I have every skill that I need, and I can always fall back on if I ever fall on hard times or something doesn't pan out. I can always just kind of look for a job and say, oh yeah, I can do that here. So, I mean, professionally, the longest job I've ever had was as an industrial pump technician and welder. I did that for about 3 years. So that was kind of the strongest skill set, and that's kind of what I wanted to do for, that's where I thought I would be, is in the industrial sector, working on giant pumps and machinery and stuff like that. I really enjoy the smell of welding, but it's also a very hard job. I'm 31 and I'm all creaky and broken, already. So, and it's, you know, noxious fumes, and you know, and the people who are in it, you know, it's a hard life. So you play hard, you party hard, you work hard. And that really messed me up for a good long while. I have a personality, an addictive personality. So whenever I get into something, actually I go really hard into it. Which brings me to dog training. I found a trailer that really needed a lot of work. And the guy, was just kind of let me live there while I fixed it up. So he was paying for all the material. And then I did the work and I just lived there. So, I didn't have to make a lot of money. I went down to the Humane Society, 'cause I had a dog Dodger who's over there. He's a he's a 4-year-old American Pit Bull Terrier mix. Rescued him. Well, I didn't rescue him. My friend rescued him. I think he's like Pit Bull Border Collie or something. So he's got a brindle front paw.
Oh, wow.
And then around his eyes, but he's black and white, and black and white speckles and all that stuff. So he was living with me, and, you know, so he was and this is kind of what got me into positive reinforcement training. I don't know if you want to go down that yet. So I just started going down and volunteering at the Humane Society here in town. I'm a longboarder. So I would take my longboard down there and I'd get the dogs and I'd actually take them for a run.
Oh, nice.
to try to get them out of the kennel, get their heart rate up and, you know, actually get some good exercise rather than just walking and, you know, pulling on a leash or pulling against people. And then after, I don't know, it wasn't too long, 2 or 3 weeks. So they're like, oh, we have a, you know, it's all part time. It's going to be like 4 hours a day. So I worked there for, I don't know, like 5 months, 6 months or whatever. And how I got into the positive reinforcement side of training was working with those dogs and realizing that they hadn't done anything wrong. They just hadn't been taught anything. They were either dogs that were just left outside all the time, or, you know, they were allowed to be dogs for the first 6 months of their lives and jump all over and whatever. And then they turned out to be 85-pound black labs or Australian shepherds. And they, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they got big enough to nip hard enough to hurt kids that are running around screaming in the farm. So like I said, when it came to dog walking, it was kind of told to me and everybody that, you know, just tell the volunteers to just walk them, let them go where they want to go rather than trying to train them and walk on a short leash and all that stuff. Just, I mean, they're locked up in this kennel for 23 hours a day, really. Just let them go and hang out and just walk and just follow them. And if they want to go over there, then, I mean, within reason, like, don't let them just cross the street, but just let them go. And, you know, and there was, but people just had so deep a mentality that, oh, I need to train this dog up because it's going to be better if, you know, the dog was trained. But I'm like, you know, it's like, you can't do that an hour, you know, and you're doing it this way, and this person's doing it this way, and this person's, and I'm doing it this way. So it got into, you know, I was actually wanting to train them, and I started looking into the CGC, and so I ended up calling the AKC and talking to the gal that ran the CDC, and she kind of gave me an evaluatorship, you know, just the packet. And she's like, yeah, just, you know, if you have a dog and you guys want to, you know, run this program here at your Humane Society and get dogs, you know, then go with it. Cool. That's fine. So then I started looking into, I just started looking at clicker training because I'd heard about it, and it was great because it was rewarding. It wasn't, you know, because that's what we did when we first got a dog, is we sat there like in the kennel, you know, on our side, just, you know, totally looking down and just, you know, just treating really high value treats to get there. But yeah, so that's how we started, is with reinforcement. And hey, if you came close to me, you got something good, and trying to build those good associations. But then for some reason it would change once they actually liked us. Then we'd start, you know, correcting them and you know, no, and quit it, and you know, color corrections and stuff. And I was just like, why do we have to change that? Why do we have to, why can't we just stay being nice? And teach them, because they, you know, like I said, you're correcting something that's, you know, they don't know anything else. And that's one of the big staples of my training now, is a dog can only do what a dog knows how to do. If you haven't taught them an alternate behavior, you're not going to get an alternate behavior.
Yeah. So how did you go from, you know, working part-time at the animal shelter to wanting to start your own dog training business?
So I worked there for like 5 or 6 months, and I was going pretty good with the clicker training. And obviously there was a lot of kind of working things out and reading while I was working and all that. And it wasn't like I was getting tons of people. They're like, you know, there's people like, oh, it's awesome, you're working with them. It's nice. Good job. Cause it was clicker training. And, you know, anybody who had heard about clicker training and being out in rural Western Nebraska were like, okay, good job, boy. I mean, that's what you can do to get them to sit. But if you want real behavior,
right,
or if you want real, you then good job for being nice to the puppies. And I didn't have a name. I was just some kid. You know, I'm from here and I don't have the greatest past. So this guy moved into town and he's a dog trainer. And he's into Shih Tzu and all that stuff. And he just came up to the Humane Society. He's like, hey, I've been a dog trainer for this long and I'll help you guys out. So they just kind of said, okay, well, yeah. You know, I just came in one day and said, well, this guy's coming in to train our dogs for us. And, you know, he came in and explained that, you know, how his skills were, or whatever. And the story he told us was about this big Rottweiler or whatever that was a junkyard dog, not a protection dog, you know, hadn't been trained. It was just afraid of everything. So he walked in and, you know, postured up on him, and then the dog was growling and all that, and he ended up taking a leak in the corner of the yard to, you know, assert his dominance over this dog and whatever. And I'm just like, I mean, kind of when I heard that, because they had told me, it's like, oh, he's a good Christian guy and, you know, he's a great dog trainer and blah, blah, blah. And I heard that, I was just kind of like, and the veil just kind of dropped, and I'm like, all right, well, you know, you're going to have this other trainer come in and he's going to train the dogs and he thinks he needs to pee in people's yards to get that to happen. And then he, you know, talking with them, he's like, yeah, I mean, the clicker thing's cool, but I can do it without it. So there's no real need to use it. And, you know, and then it's just, you know, I stopped trying and you know, I was just cleaning the kennels. Now it's like, if that's the direction you want to go, I'm not going to be a part of it.
Right. So a lot of shelters, they don't staff, you know, it's already tight as far as time and funding goes. And, you know, you have somebody that, you know, is supposedly very experienced that comes in and says they have all this experience. And
sure, go ahead. Yeah.
But there was a difference in training methods and that affects.
Well, and like I said, and it's rural Western Nebraska, so that's the way that we're raised. The laws are still is that your animals are property. You can do what you want to them. If that's okay for your dog, but I'm going to train my dog this because I want these results. Okay, yeah, cool. But what did the dog go through? I understand. Not just Nebraska.
That's pretty much everywhere.
When I was talking to, like, to my friend Laura that you guys interviewed, you know, she's like, I can't imagine what it would be like going back. She grew up in rural Kentucky, I think, and trying to train dogs back there. And I'm just like, well, it's not super easy. It's not always super difficult, but it's never super easy. Trying to get people out of their mind that, you know, I mean, the only training and, you know, any outside source people have seen to dog training is Caesar. And I try to tell people, like, that's TV dog training. That's made for TV. It's not, I mean, that's, you see an hour and they've been at it for 6 hours, you know. And I said, I don't know what he actually believes about dogs or whatever. But I just know that, whether it's Caesar or anybody, that's not what you need to do. You need to train the dog that's in front of you and not just try all these methods that work for this dog.
So when you saw the other dog trainer come in the shelter, that's kind of when you were thinking of starting out and going out on your own.
Yeah, I was also going back to college at the time. I was going for an associate's degree in engineering. So I thought, okay, well, I don't need to be here training dogs. I can take kind of the following that I set up from the Humane Society and then kind of go out and just start training dogs when I wasn't doing homework. So it started out kind of slow. I mean, I tried ramping up the dog training, being more proactive and more, put more money into the business and advertising and obviously the education, cause I just been on YouTube and, Karen Pryor case studies and, you know, stuff like that. So really trying to, you know, read books, buy books, you know, find good trainers to mimic and listen to. And then, of course, I was still doing construction whenever I could. So that was, you know, and that's kind of the segue is getting into professional dog training as a full-time job was just getting the clientele that I could live off of. I started out charging like $25 a session, you know, just to try to get as many people as I could. You know, it's like, oh, $25 an hour. That's great. Well, but not knowing as a business, you know, all the time I have to spend reading and, you know, and said and thinking about it, and then talking to people on Messenger to try to kind of show them I know what I'm talking about, for them to set up the free consultation. And, you know, it's just a lot of work to go into that. Yeah. So I mean, my prices have gone up since, because I mean, my education level and then just kind of the market value of dog training. You know, I try to charge as much as I have to make it worth my while. I mean, I like helping people, so I don't like charging too much.
A little bit of research and found that your town only has about 14,000 residents. How are you currently serving this kind of rural community?
Well, Scotts Bluff has 14,000, but then there's actually three cities right here. There's Scotts Bluff, Gearing, and Tarrytown, and they're all like sister, they all touch. So I mostly do in-town work, but I actually have gone out to other towns. Alliance is 45 minutes away. Sydney, Nebraska is like an hour away. Torrington is, Wyoming is 45 minutes west of us. There's other scattered towns around us. There's Minotaur, Mitchell, Bayard, Bridgeport, you know, just kind of little 5,000 population towns around me.
I'm really careful about kind of which cities you're scheduling for which days.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going out to Alliance or Sydney, then what I did, I mean, I made sure that I had to have at least one, but then I made sure not to schedule anybody else in Scottsbluff or Gearing for like 3 hours or 4 hours after that. Right now, I'm pretty much local here in Scottsbluff, just really, really figuring out the, you know, and when I charge mileage, but it's not actual mileage. It's like $15 for every extra. So whatever I would charge in Scotts Bluff for a session, I charge that plus like $15 to drive an hour, you know, both ways. And it's just like, because, you know, I can't charge just as much to drive as I can to actually work with you, and people aren't going to pay it. And I really want to help them out. So I'm just like, okay, well, I guess I'll take a loss for 2 hours and, you know, you pay for my gas, and I know I need that.
Right. What kind of services do you offer? Just in-home, like private lessons, or do you do boarding trains or anything like that?
No, I don't do anything in my home because I have the three dogs and kids and rats and cats, okay. And it's just too much. I believe that, you know, I know that dogs don't generalize well, so it's easier to start the behavior in their home. And then generalize it out. That's always what I tell people. It's like, I'm coming to your house where your dog's the most confident, most calm, the least amount of distractions. You know, I mean, as a dog trainer and knowing all that, I mean, distance, distraction, duration, flow, all that. So it's private in their home training. I do pet sitting, which is just me coming in up to like four times a day and playing with them for 20-30 minutes. And if they're a client, then I'll do some training with them. I do day training, which is the exact same thing, but it's complementing the private sessions that people do, or I'll go to their house for half an hour and just do drills with their dogs on whatever behaviors we're working on. So sit, you know, and just get the behavior and just get the body mechanics down, so the dog knows how to move its body the right way and get that kind of muscle memory built up. And then, you know, obviously it's my sound that they're cueing off of, but at least it's an idea in the dog's head that it's something I can do. So then when the owner comes home, they say their own sit word and sound, and the dog might be more likely to offer that behavior. So then the homeowner can reinforce it and mark it properly. And so the dog understands that this sound and this sound both mean the same thing, that my butt needs to hit the floor, I need to go prone, or I need to back up, or whatever we're working with. My niche that I'm trying to figure out and try to get into is more of the enrichment side and sports. So I build some puzzle toys, some treat dispensing toys.
Yeah, I saw you giving those away on your Facebook page.
Yeah, I just make, I mean, it's just out of PVC, 2-inch PVC. It's really simple to make. And I tell people, I was like, well, I try to sell it before I even show it to people because it's not hard to figure out. But it's, I feed my dogs out of it. You know, just, you know, it's just a little roller, you know, kind of like a Kong wobble or whatever. They just have to push it around. It's made of PVC. So my big pit bulls, you know, they've had theirs for like 2 years now and the hole's gotten bigger. But it's, as a whole, it's still together. So I tell people it's like, it's the last puzzle toy that you'll, or treat dispensing toy that you'll ever have to buy. I've only had like, I think one client that said that their dog actually got into it, but it was a bigger dog. So I might have to use like a 3-inch, when I build them a new one. I started doing snuffle mats. I make a bottle, you know, where the 2-liter bottles are sitting and the dog has to paw it and flip the bottles around. I've made a couple of those for people.
I think that's kind of a really nice skill, where you're meeting in the middle between your construction knowledge and the dog training knowledge.
I actually made a couple of flirt poles.
Nice. I was going to suggest that. Yeah.
So,
awesome.
So I got some pink tiger stripe duct tape, and it's just PVC and then PEX. So Rufio is my flirt pole boy. He loves chasing his flirt pole. What I tell my clients is you have to find the thing that the dog will never say no to. And I actually have a real lunge line that I use with him, that if I have that, he's right here. He doesn't care about anything. So I can't really, you know, I can get him to do the things that I've taught him to do, or I lay him back and then free is his release word, or get, and then he comes up and I've got him jumping like 9 foot in the air to catch the bite on his toys. And I'm trying to, and this is where the excellent niche is, trying to do dog sports and different sports than what's out here. So I'm trying to get him to do that same jump with just throwing a toy, and then get him to do dock jumping and start a dock jumping club. I have rats. I have 13 of them now, because my female rat just had a litter of 10 pups. So barn hunt is another national sport. So it's, you know, putting the rats in the little cages and hiding them in hay, and then the dog has to snip them out.
Do people do sports there? Is you know, getting out active?
What are people doing
with their dogs there?
They are expecting them to be statues in their house and lay around and do nothing. They take them out for walks. We have a little dog park. I'm a member of the dog park committee, and we're trying to get funds raised for a 5-acre grass dog park. We're trying to get an agility course set up in there. So that would be another one of the sports. We have an AKC group. I mean, an AKC, the Scotts Bluff Kennel Club here, that they do some of that stuff, but, you know, kind of, you know, it's a AKC club, so they're kind of purebreds and, you know, whatever. So they don't talk to me very well. I don't know why. Whenever I go to their shows, the one guy who's the president, he's a nice guy, but everybody else, they're just kind of like, oh, it's Jeffrey.
That only changes when you show up and
I'm trying to help dogs.
That only changes when, you know, you show up with your mixed breed dog, which is perfectly legal to compete now, and, you know, get a 197.
Yeah, and it's, so, you know, and I don't compete in it, but I just show up to. I mean, my kids love dogs, so I just go to kind of watch them and see all these, you know, like an Afghan hound, and, you know, it's like they're cool to look at. But then, you know, also to say, hey, I'm local here, and just kind of get some networks and connections. But it's not even the mixed breed. It's the fact I'm a positive reinforcement trainer and I'm a clicker trainer. So obviously they use the little tight chains as they walk. And I was actually the owner of All Breed Rescue and Training in Colorado Springs was up here for the last show, and she was like one of the ones, she's like, you are not a positive reinforcement dog trainer. I'm like, and she's like, it's so awesome that you are, but, you know, she's like, you're not what I would think of as a positive reinforcement dog trainer. And literally, there's, as we were talking, there's this lady standing right in front of us trying to get her dog to stand right in front of her at a certain distance. And whenever the dog got too close, she would step down and step on the dog's toes.
Yeah.
To get it to back up and not want to come close. And we're like, yeah, you could totally shape that. I mean, I'll just have to put a little mat on the ground and stand there, and just whenever their feet are in the right position, you click and treat. And it's just like, but that's not how we do it.
Right.
So it's not necessarily the Mohawk. It's not necessarily what dogs I own. It's the fact that I train dogs with dogs in mind. That's what I feel. Like I said, I've never actually talked to them, and they've never said anything, but they're not like me and will just tell somebody you're an idiot if I think you're an idiot. but if I don't like you, here's why. And it's just because, you know, sometimes I don't like people. But it's, yeah, so going back to sports, I mean, that's why, because there's nothing to do around here. There's people that play fetch with their dogs. People go down to the dog park and let their dogs run around. There's people that take there's hunting and there's herding. So hunting's big around here. I have a buddy that raises wire hair pointing Griffons, and I go out with him and I help him run his dogs. We have a bird launcher and all that stuff. And I don't hunt at all, so I've never got into it, but obviously it's just training a dog to do something.
So given that there's not a lot of activities and you've got sort of, you know, the backyard dogs that are making up their own rules, what are the kind of problems that you're seeing with the dogs in your area?
I mean, the problems that the dogs have is they have no idea what the hell they're supposed to do.
What do people call you?
Well, there's it's a lot of reactivity, unsocialized. You know, they played with them as puppies and they took them out, but then the dog started growling. They don't know what fear states are. Yeah. So the puppy started growling at people, and then the dog didn't go outside as much, and it just extrapolated and just became its own, you know, I need to be afraid of them. There's a lot of rescues around here. I mean, a lot of the calls I get are for rescues, and they don't know, you know, it's always, well, I think they were abused before because this is happening. I think they're abused because this is happening. And I'm like, I don't know, but here, let's work with the behavior. The most recent clients I signed, one is an older guy that usually works a lot, and now he's on workman's comp, so he's home more now, but he sees his dog barking a lot and kind of reacting to people, and it's just the dog, it's fun, and the dog doesn't get out enough to build good associations. I got a standard poodle that's really reactive to like loud noises, and it's kind of like a trigger stacking thing. They're out in the country. It's really, really, really stuck on cats and chasing the cats around. And then, you know, and then the guy starts the riding mower or the tractor or whatever, and the dog just freaks out and comes up and bites him. Got another dog that's just really, really hyper, and the couple's a little older, and it just likes jumping. So they're trying to just a little impulse control there. And like I said, just, you know, the dog doesn't know what to do. It knows sit, lay, and go into its kennel. Yeah. But if those aren't working, then it's going to jump. So teaching it some more skills to add to the repertoire before the jump up.
Have you thought at all about specializing in any of those certain common behavior issues that you're seeing?
Yeah, I know it's not the best thing to do, but I'm kind of, like I said, I'm a jack of all trades. And it's not necessarily that I'm going to, I mean, I am going to help people. Every client I've ever had, the only clients I ever failed at were the ones that just didn't want to do anything. I constantly show up and they say, we haven't worked very much, or they just want to fight me. Everything I say is, well, I don't think. And I was like, well, and you called me. Yeah. And I'm the guy that studies dog behavior all day long and you don't. So it's what I say with dog training and anything. It's like a debate class when you were in high school. The goal was not to get people to your side. It was just to move them.
Yeah.
Just as much as you can. So they're over here and you're way over here and they go. So when you're working with a dog, and especially a problem dog, I tell people, it's like well, my biggest standpoint is quit expecting and start training. So you're not going to get, if you're here, your dog's here and you want here, you need to stop expecting this because you're just going to frustrate both of you. You need to train to get to here and then get to here and then get to here.
Does that mean you want to sort of specialize in like the general manners, or is there a specific type of,
like I said, I want to do the sports, because that's just fun as hell. And it gets people out, and it's a, like I said, it's a niche that I can bring in people from everywhere and hopefully get some, you know, some stuff out in Western Nebraska to make it so people are like, oh, hey, the big place to do this is Western Nebraska. My biggest baby right now I'm trying to get up is one of those Tough Mudder obstacle courses.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And obviously I'm just going to build it so that people can do it, but there's going to be a leg of it or something that at least dogs can do as well. And people can get out with their dogs and teach them to jump through the windows or belly crawl underneath the net or run up the wall, A-frame, you know, some kind of like agility, but massively greater, grander. So it's going to be a course set up for humans to run. So there's going to be a lot of obstacles that dogs can do, rope walls and stuff like that. And then just try to get more people out here for those events and get kind of on there. I'm like I said, I'm an addictive personality. I just, you know, I go for the best and biggest as I can. So the sport groups I'm trying to start up and fill out is, like I said, it's just dog owners, whatever group sport you want to be in, they would meet once a month and kind of go over the skills and go over the rules and go over the what you need to do for that sport. And then hopefully, you know, they pay some dues and then I take those and I buy all the equipment. So agility, try to get some weave poles and try to build an A-frame. And for barn hunts, you know, I have the rats and I mean, everybody, you know, you can buy a rat and then you can raise it and then your dog can, you know, do that. Dog jumping is obviously.
So basically starting kind of your own dog sport club.
Yeah. And then hopefully just kind of it goes out from there where, you know, people will get into it and want to be it. So I don't have to be the central part of it, but I'd be the one organizing it and helping with it. So I have dogs that I want to get into certain sports like Slacky. Right. I want her to do fly ball. I don't know what Dodger wants to do, but I know Rufio loves jumping.
Maybe lurk.
His would be rabbits anyway, any day of the week. He loves chasing rabbits. And that's one of the training things that I tell people is when he sees a rabbit, he sits. And that's, I always worked with that is the, you know, the kind of panskeps model of, you know, getting a dog to do a lesser behavior for the greater behavior. So he knows that if he sits, he actually gets to chase the rabbit. If he just goes after it, then he doesn't get to play. And it's much funner to chase a rabbit with me than by himself. So it's when I'm walking down the street and he sees a rabbit, you know, his butt just hits the floor, and then I start looking around like him, and then we take off, and people are like, man, that's crazy. So yeah, definitely some lure coursing rabbits and stuff with him. Yeah, so
you're bringing positive reinforcement to Nebraska. I think that's something that's really needed, especially out in the rural community. Do you have any tips for maybe another dog trainer that's out there that's in the rural area that is just getting started?
I mean, the biggest problem, the thing that I've had is people want you to say that you're going to guarantee something or, you know, just that, like whatever I charge for 6 weeks, at the end of that 6 weeks, people just want to have perfect dogs, and it's just like, no. I mean, so get as much, absolutely as much education and experience as you can. I have my hours for the CPDTKA. I just couldn't afford it in September when I signed up, so I'll be doing it the next time. I just finished one course on shaping through the Finzi Dog Sports Academy.
Oh, great.
I follow her a lot.
Yeah.
I've read tons of books. I can't name them all, and I don't know where they are. Yeah. They're in my dog box. So when people say, hey, you know, what do you know? You can at least rattle it off. And I tell people, I say, it doesn't even matter, because you know, if you don't know these people, you know, I can say, so, Denise Fenzi or Shade Weitzel, and they're like,
yeah, they would know.
Like,
yeah.
So it's just, what it's really, I mean, just do a lot of reading, is get as much education as you can, and just try to have a good presence in your community that you're going to have people that back you up. So I'm out in the community, I'm meeting people. We just had the Balloon Fest, which is a bunch of balloons, hot air balloons, and I'm the safety coordinator for that. And like I said, I'm on the dog parks committee, and I always go out to events, and I've done the farmers markets, and you know, I've met influential people. The sheriff, our Scottsdale County sheriff, we flew him like 3 weeks ago, so I met him. You know, and I mean, he has a canine, but no handler. So I was kind of like, hey, you know. Because actually I want to raise Italian Mastiff, the Cane Corso, and there's obviously a protection type dog. That's what people want them for. So I would enjoy, I said, with one of those sport clubs to start doing shit ton and bite work and personal protection type training with that. So I have the sheriff who has his canine unit with no handler. I'm like, I'd love to really come out and see you. Yeah. So it's a lot of just figure out what your thing is. Obviously try to help out as many people as you can. You might not get a dog 100% changed around, but as long as you make the dog's life and the human's life better in some way where that person can say, hey, I mean, I noticed my dog is better and I'm thankful for that.
Right.
Then go for it. I mean, I see a lot of trainers on Facebook that are like, they're like timid, like they don't want to get out there and they don't want to, I'm just like, if you've read 5 books on dog training, then you know way more than the average homeowner does, right, about dog training. And that's worth something. And if it's, you know, like I said, I tell people, I was like, I got 5 different ways to try to teach your dog to sit on cue. One of those might work for your dog. 4 of them won't. But then I got 4 other dogs. So, I mean, just having that experience is definitely worth it, that you can help somebody with your dog and you can ask for money for that service because they're super happy that they don't have to invest so much time or work to get their dog to do what they think their dog should do. So that's kind of it. I mean, I'm a confident guy. I'm a bullheaded guy. So it's just kind of be more out there and be more, you know, people are going to talk bad about you. You know, there's going to be people that just don't get it. There's going to be people that go through your course and come out of it. I just had a 1-star on my Google profile from a gal. I trained her puppy, like a 4-month-old puppy, like 9 months ago. And now she's having all these problems with the dog. Didn't contact me at all for 9 months. And then put a big review like, oh, he never taught me this. He never taught me this. And I was like, you took a 5-week yeah. puppy course.
Yeah.
You know?
You can only do what you can do.
Yeah. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I think others will find this really helpful. So thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much.
Do you love the podcast? Looking for more to grow your dog training business? Check out our website at themoderndogtrainer.net to learn more from our blog, join our Facebook group, or take a course. Ross Malcolm Boyd edits the program, but he does a lot more than that. Visit rossmalcolmboyd.com for rainbow unicorns, online music lessons, and more.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Dog Trainer podcast. Don't forget, you can check out the show notes at themoderndogtrainer.net/podcast. You can also share your thoughts and support our podcast by leaving a review on iTunes. Until next time.